Blog Talk Radio.
Hey everyone, welcome to another edition of Troy Noons, an absolute podcast. I'm your host, as always, John Casillo, and with me today is Dan Lyons.
Hello, and welcome to the post-heart attack edition of Troy Noons is an absolute podcast.
Yes, the Heart Health Challenge presented by Syracuse Sports and the good people at Troy Noons is an absolute magician. Before we jump into what was a very fun slash very terrifying evening, I just want to give a quick shout-out to our sponsor, Audible.com. As you all know, they're a leading provider of spoken digital audio entertainment, and you can get ebooks there wherever and whenever you want at Audible.com. If you want a free audiobook and a 30-day free trial of the service, you can also go to Audible.com/noonsmagician. That's Audible Podcast. .com/noonsmagician, and you'll be able to grab yourself a 30-day free trial and a free download. So yeah, we're coming at you from our respective living rooms across the country, but right after what was an interesting Wake Forest game that we happened to win by stroke of luck and Rakeem Christmas.
Yeah, that's pretty much the entirety of it. And, you know, Cooney and Benajay did their part too. But, man, that was pretty terrifying. We had the classic random guy who scores like 7 points a game, comes off the bench to score 26 and shoot insanely. We had requisite, you know, a half-court shot went in and what would have been a game-tying half-court shot or like three-quarter court shot almost went in the next half for after the end of overtime. So that was fun. We had a team that's normally like a 63% free throw shooting team shoot like almost 75%. That was fun. So yeah, a lot of stuff that, you know, isn't usually in the cards for a team that comes into the Terrier Dome went well, and the Wake Forest team of Deacons almost knocked off the Orange. So nothing we haven't seen before, but always good to revisit these great trends that we've developed over the last couple of years of the program.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny because I feel like before every game we kind of joke about the random white guy gets off the bench and scores from three as he never has in his career. And I think a lot of outside commentators use that as the main, kind of the main way of taking apart the zone. But it's become very odd how much it happens. Like, I'd say it used to happen every so often, and we just kind of joke about it like it happened all the time. Now it's actually happening all the time, and it's definitely providing for some pretty scary moments for Orange fans, especially tonight, when the Greek kid, he was what? I think he scored 5 points combined the last two games, and he goes off for 26 tonight.
Yeah, and I mean, it's maybe not quite as infuriating as when Louisville did it to us twice in the same year with two different people, with Kyrick and Mara, neither of whom played a lot of minutes at the time. But it does seem like it's happening, you know, at least a couple times a season, which is very frustrating. Especially when we don't have that happen. Like, we don't have Ron Patterson go out there and shoot, like, hit five threes in a game. Ron Patterson goes out there and shoots bricks and plays pretty good defense, and that's why he plays. But, like, we don't have the sparks off the bench. Maybe it's because Boeheim plays a pretty, you know, thin rotation, but it's all we got. And it'd be nice if one of our unexpected guys would come out of nowhere for a huge game like that. But I guess it's on the cards for the old Orange.
It never is for some reason. again, you know, as we kind of hinted at, like, this isn't something that we ever see SU really do. Bayon's rotations don't really allow for it. We just don't have these random guys. So at the end of the day, I guess we can kind of, we don't want to take away too much from what will appear on the site in the morning, you know, some five takeaways, stuff like that. But what's your big positive takeaway first? We'll kind of go talk through those and then go to some negative takeaways from this game.
Positive has to be Christmas. I mean, he's just unbelievable. I put it out there on Twitter, and maybe someone will write this up later in the week. But basically, you could make a very strong argument that Christmas is having the best single season for Syracuse since, well, I think you go back pretty safely to Wes Johnson, and if you really want to, you can probably go back to Hakeem Warwick, and that's not being that crazy. He's averaging, heading into tonight, he was averaging 17.1 and 8.9 rebounds and 2.4 blocks. And tonight he put up 35, 9, only one block tonight, hit, I think, his last seven free throws, which were all crucial. It might actually be more than that. I think he was one for his first four and finished 9 of 12, so what, he hit his last eight. Just a really crazy game for him, and he's becoming a player that he can manage his fouls. He played the last, I think he got his fourth foul not that late into the game. I think there were 6 minutes left in regulation, so he played the last 11 minutes without picking up a fifth foul. He was the go-to player on offense repeatedly, aside from the occasion where, you know, the occasions where Cooney would hit something crazy or Benajay when he wasn't throwing up unfortunate, you know, Miss Leia's at the buzzer, was having a pretty nice game otherwise. He's only finished in single digits once, and in Cal. He's netted 5 double-doubles and come very close a number of other times. Like, he's just been so consistently good. I saw, well, I forgot what ACC writer it was. It wasn't a Syracuse writer. He's, like, there's not that many big men in the country that are very good. There are a couple in Kentucky. There are a couple like here and there. Montrezl Harrell obviously registers that he's, you know, a little more of a 4 than a 5. But there's no reason why Christmas shouldn't be very heavily considered for first-team All-American this year. He's playing that well. And the rest of the team has a lot of issues. There are really only 3 players that we can go to on a consistent basis for points. And, you know, teams do their best to take Cooney away, so that's not always available. And Christmas still just gets his, and he does it very efficiently, and he's clearly the leader of the team. So I think I saw Matt McCluskey tweeted earlier, like, if you can get down on the Syracuse team, and that's fine, it's understandable considering how good some of the teams in the past have been, but Christmas is having a special season, and if you're not paying attention or you're getting down on this team, you really are missing out on what is one of the best seasons we've seen in recent years.
Oh, very much agreed. And, you know, I've mentioned it too. This is one of those things where if this is any Syracuse team in the last 4 years, you know, we quickly, you know, rush to call him player of the year candidate, and we actually wouldn't be on that far off base. I mean, the guy has just completely changed his game, dominated in just about every facet. He is the glue that holds a very, very young team together, and really helps make up for some efficiencies on both ends of the floor. You know, for I think much of the rest of the team. Looking through the box score, it's just wild to see. You know, I think some mentioned in advance that, like, while it was unfortunate to have McCullough out, obviously, you know, Roberson in a starting role could probably do very well on the board still, which he did. And then Michael Benajay, like you said, beyond that, that missed layup, had a very good game. You know, had 17, 11, and 7, almost a triple-double for him. But 11 boards for Benajay, considering where he plays on the floor, is nice. And it's kind of a reoccurring trend for him of late to see him jump in there and really, you know, really be active. On both ends. I mean, he had 3 offensive, 8 defensive rebounds. So I think a nice game from him on the positive side. Trevor Cooney also, I think we've been talking about Cooney for so long as, you know, I think he finally gets it again, that now, like, his resurgence is not even a story because we're kind of used to it, but it's still great to me to see, you know, him as a player. You know, it took a while. He needed some time to get his head back on straight, find a shooting stroke from two, find other ways to contribute to the game, and now he's actually back to hitting from three, which is, you know, absolutely awesome. On the negative side, however, not for Cooney, but in general, you know, we still have a lot of issues with this team. I think Joseph not really being able to play in crunch time because of his defensive lapses, that's a negative. B.J. Johnson and Ron Patterson did not look great tonight. And that was a big problem. I think even more stark is just how much we had to run with these starters. And if we can't rest our starters at all, or most of our starters at all, in a game against one of our weaker opponents left in Wake Forest, then, you know, what does that mean for the rest of the season when we still have a lot of really tough games left? And I just don't think it's conceivable that guys like Christmas and Benajay, both of whom were playing four fouls late for a while, and managed to stay on the court. Like, how are we going to, you know, stick with the Dukes and stick with even the teams like NC State and Pitt and Notre Dame? How are we going to stick with all of those teams when we were only looking at seven guys?
Yeah, it's going to be a struggle, especially because, you know, Roberson's a nice player. He gives a lot of effort. He had that huge rebound today, which was a very important play. So I think, you know, he's not a great shooter. He hit a couple big ones today, but he also took some that were just really ugly. But I think for the most part, he kind of knows what he is. I'd like to see him not linger on the perimeter so much, but, you know, maybe have to for spacing or whatnot. But BJ and Patterson, we're really going to need one of them to be at least like a guy that teams have to respect a little bit. And Patterson has no fear of shooting. That's very clear. He shot, you know, he had six shots today. BJ seems pretty hesitant, even though he's supposed to be, you know, one of the better shooters on the team. He just hasn't found it. And I don't know if that's because he hasn't enough time or he's just, you know, hasn't learned to translate that to the actual beams. But, I mean, it'd be huge if he could give us something. But then when you have Caleb, who clearly since Boeheim told him not to be a shooter, he took that to heart. And took that to mean to, like, never shoot a jump shot ever, unless it's, like, the end of the shot clock. And he's passed up on so many wide-open looks the last couple of days. It's been a little disconcerting. Like, I don't think he should be taking, you know, forced threes. I don't think he should be taking, you know, heat check shots. But he's passed up on wide-open attempts that, you know, a decent college basketball player can knock down with some regularity. So hopefully he starts to add that – you know, a little more aggressiveness back into his game now that he's playing a much better floor game now, which is good. But also the defense is an issue, which is why Patterson plays all of crunch time now, which then brings about the issue of Patterson is, you know, can be a little bit of a ball stopper, but also takes pretty bad shots and doesn't make a lot of them. So we just need one of those three to really give us something on offense, because otherwise we're playing pretty much 3-on-5 most of the time, with Roberson being like maybe like 3.5-on-5, I guess. So that's an issue. And then if we could get like 5 minutes at Chino, that'd be great. But obviously that wasn't going to happen tonight because Christmas was on fire and we couldn't get him off the floor. So I don't know. Depth is going to be an issue, like it so often is for Syracuse. And that's why this Mattullah injury, he wasn't playing that well, but I think he was important for how the offense looked, because he was a threat from all over the floor, and just the extra fouls, the extra manpower. I mean, even when he wasn't shooting well, he was still grabbing boards pretty well, and he played pretty good defense, recorded a bunch of blocks. So it's a big loss either way, and I do feel really bad for him.
No, as do I. I think that we're going to see plenty of in between tonight and in the next few games, plenty of, oh, maybe the offense ran better without McCullough, and maybe this team doesn't need McCullough, and I don't agree with that at all. I know you don't either. But do you think that this offense is different without McCullough? And that can be that could be good, that could be bad, that could just be, you know, just plain old different. That it seems like there's a different tone of things, and it seems that it kind of allows Benajay to get a lot more involved, but at the same time also really creates that 3-on-5 you were talking about, where pretty much have to pray that Cooney hits threes, pray that Benajay can hit jumpers, and then hope that, you know, Christmas goes off.
I don't know. I think it's too small of a sample size. I think part of the reason why today Syracuse got off to a really fast start is because Wake likes to play a really high-paced game, which helps because, you know, SU, as usual, is more comfortable in the open floor. Obviously, they missed a lot of unfortunate layups today, which should have put the game away a lot earlier. But I don't know. I think maybe we'll see a little bit of different offense. It seems like mostly because Caleb's not out there either, but Benajay is kind of becoming the de facto point guard down the stretch, which is definitely interesting, and I don't really mind it. He's a good playmaker, and he doesn't make too many mistakes for someone who isn't really a natural one. Was not a great day for him, but he also finishes at the rim about as well as anyone. As a team, we struggle with that in general, but I don't know. I think we'll have to watch a couple more games to really figure out if this is like a better, worse, or just different offense, and how it looks without McCullough in there.
There. And I guess I want to give a quick shout to Jared, who decided to join us tonight.
I'm all jacked up.
Yeah, you can't sleep. Pushing that bedtime back.
Oh, my gosh. I guess we'll be till about 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning until I go to bed. Usually around this time, I'm sound asleep or ready to go. So, but not tonight, that's for sure. As much as it was a heart, you know, heart-throbbing, nail-biting game, that was a fun game to watch. It was good basketball, at least, which is something we haven't seen in a while. It was a lot of scoring, and I always like to see that. So that was
It wasn't
45. No, it was
I hope no game is ever 46-45 again, to be perfectly honest. Because that wasn't basketball. That was just something where a bunch of people threw a ball around a court, and nobody really had any interest in putting it in the basket, which is what it's designed to do. I can't watch anything like that ever again.
I will say the one thing about this winning streak that we've had, I know that the first three were against, or you can say the first four wins were against teams that weren't very good, but during the winning streak, at least we've had different styles of play. Syracuse played against different styles of play and come out on top against all of them. So that's kind of nice to see. Wake Forest, they wanted to press. They wanted to go. And, you know, Syracuse got off to a quick start there. And it looked like they kind of got gassed after going off in that quick start, and Wake Forest was able to take advantage of that. And, you know, that big, tall Greek guy just went off and made every shot, which helped him get back in the game. But it was nice to see that, you know, Syracuse kind of hung in there and made the good enough plays at the end. I mean, Wake Forest gave them all they could. I mean, they shot really well from the floor. They played good defense. Not good defense, but they shot really well from the floor and just took it to them. I mean, and Syracuse, you know, was able to hold them off. And that was really nice to see. Obviously, it took 35 points for Team Christmas. Another great shooting night for Cooney and Benajay stepping up in this in overtime to do it. But overall, I mean, that's how this team is going to win games now. So they were able to do it. And it's nice to have 7 wins in a row, and went 8 of the last 9. So that's kind of nice.
Yeah, can't really complain about it, especially with how the team looked earlier in the year. It'd be nice to not have the games end by 1 point or 2 points every, 3 out of the last 4, or they were all one possession at least. But Wake's also not a team you can really sleep on too much. Louisville, they took Louisville down to the wire a bit. They lost by 9, but I think it was closer than that for most of the game. They gave Duke a scare 3 days later, and then they beat Georgia Tech by 7 3 days ago. So this isn't a team that, you know, they're not going to put up like a bunch of wins this year, but it seems like they're playing everyone pretty tough. So
yeah,
I don't think
this is going to be a win that looks better as the season goes along, because Wake is better than their 9-9 record. They've got some bad losses in the early season, but as the season progresses, they're going to get better. And they're going to give some teams some issues because with their tempo, and I got some guys that can do some things too.
Yeah, and they're playing a lot differently than last season. So there was it seems like there was an adjustment early in the year. I didn't watch their early games where they were losing by, 30 to Arkansas, but they have some nice players. I mean, Miller McIntyre has been a good player for a couple of years now. Devin Thomas is a really solid big man in the ACC. I wouldn't normally put Metalou on that list, but apparently he's, just amazing sometimes. I think I'm going to look up what his previous season high was, because we were talking about before. He scored 15 against Princeton, but then he scored 6, 2, and 3 in his last three games. So that's, we should have probably known that this is going to be the guy to go off for 26.
I think that needs to be part of the previews from now on, Jared. It's a dangerous white guy.
Identify. Yeah, you have to identify yourself. He was going to drop 20-something points.
You're the guy that's going to go off. And it's tough to do that, though, because, I try to watch as much ACC basketball as I can. I've seen some Wake Forest games. But, that kid, the Greek kid tonight, he really hasn't done a whole lot this year. And that's the thing, too. He was just – he was unconscious. He couldn't – he was ready to shoot the ball as soon as he hit his fingertips. And, everybody was getting on the Syracuse defense or closing in on him. But, they had – a half second to get ready, and he was just knocking down everything. So it's tough to sometimes get those guys, because you never know when that guy's going to get hot. Otherwise, it was funny because at one point during the second half, I think Syracuse was down 7 or 8 points, and I looked at the box score, and if that kid had just made 66% of his shots, Syracuse would have led by 2 points. So it was just that's how crazy good he was. At one point, was if he was just even really, really good, Syracuse would have been winning, but he's just making everything, so it's just crazy.
Yeah, I think he made his first 9 or 10.
I think it was something like that.
Yeah, first 9 attempts, I think. Yeah, and then he was 11 for 12, because he hit it on 3 there at one point.
I think the good way to scout these guys from now on is step one, look through the roster profile and find the East Groningest white kid. Step two, find the kid who has scored between 2 and 5 points a game on maybe 20% shooting. And then step three, just insert him as the scariest person in the game, because I think we've set up a pattern at this point of the person you would least expect has become the person you would most expect, so might as well just prep for it.
Yeah.
I honestly wouldn't have been upset if Boeheim was running guys out on him early. But he didn't he doesn't score ever, so he's clearly gonna probably go off unless we identify him right away. So but he did miss his last couple, and they were all big misses because clearly he was feeling it. So I guess the odds that he would eventually cool down worked out. It was just not until overtime.
Right, and I think that's the key to any Boeheim defense, has always been, and we even saw it in a game when they never stopped being hot, the Wisconsin game a few years ago, is the odds are with you if they're going to be shooting lights out for the majority of the first half, but they're going to cool off in the second half, and that's when you can pull away and trade those long misses from three for twos down the floor, or transition threes, or whatever it may be. And I think, once again, the odds work themselves out for Syracuse. The kid still shot unconscious for most of the game. But that said, he has brought up, it was those key shots at the end that he didn't make that allowed Syracuse to pull away and win.
Yeah, and it helped that we all knew where the ball was going.
Also true. So interesting note, I know we were talking about it in our internal chat room. Brian had mentioned that Rocky and Christmas put up the most points since 1971 for a Syracuse center, and he would be correct. Old Bill Smith scored 47 with 17 rebounds, I think, against Lafayette. We are nearly 44 years to the day. We are literally hours off. I shit you not.
Every 44 years, the Syracuse Center will emerge.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, for being four, that's insane. Because I didn't see the date when Brian was alerting us to that. But no, that's nuts.
I missed it a little bit before I came on, so I was writing a quick recap for the website. Do you guys discuss like how fun it is to watch Chris's now, and even Cooney now, because at this point. You can see both of them have this, like, FU attitude. Like, they know that the only two guys on the team that's going to make them win, like, make Syracuse have a chance to win or pull out a victory. So they both have this, like, ego going on now, which is fantastic. And, I mean, Christmas, who, when he started as a freshman and sophomore, who was, like, the gentle giant that, you know, Boeheim was always like, you know, he's just too friendly. He needs to get a little bit more angry. Every time he gets the ball, he goes up, he makes the basket. He's pissed off because he didn't get the foul call, or he, you know, he's just like owning up against the guy he's against. And it's just a lot of fun to see. And it's not just like he's got one go-to move. He's got a bunch. He's got three, four, five different moves that are really working for him. And not only that, he's hitting free throws, and that's huge if you're a big man. And that's just a lot of fun to watch, and it's a weapon that many other teams don't have, and that's really going to bode well, I think, for Syracuse, especially against the teams that they should be in these games, like, you know, like the Wake Forest, the Florida States, the Boston Colleges. It should help them a lot because no one has a guy that they can match up with them, and that's hopefully can help Syracuse, you know, earn that. Earn enough victories to get that NCAA bid.
Yeah, Christmas definitely has something. He has proverbial like twinkle in his eye now, where he's definitely looked like next level more aggressive than he has in the last 3 years. Cooney always looks like he's ready to just stick a dagger in someone. Like he's constant Cooney face now, which is amazing. But yeah, those two clearly they're just playing with chips on their shoulders, which is great because every night they're bringing it now, which, you know, I feel like Cooney's always been pretty fiery, but Christmas, like you said, was always pretty laid back and one of those guys where you couldn't really tell how he was feeling on the court. Like, I'm sure he was always playing hard, but it wasn't like he was going out there and he didn't look like he was, you know, overly aggressive or anything. This year, he's still, you know, he seems pretty quiet, but he's definitely has a different kind of fire. And maybe that just comes from confidence, that he knows he's the best player on the court most nights.
Oh, I mean, Cooney's got some Diebendorf face going now. I'm a big fan of just that Diebendorf, I'm going to stand on tables and yell at the garden swagger. He's rolling with lately.
I mean, Cooney definitely has the attitude now. I mean, he's got an 8 or 9 game stretch now where he's just been fantastic. But even early in the season when he was struggling, you could tell, like, even when he was releasing it, you know, he had a lean or so, or it just looked a little off. He wasn't sure if it was going in. Now it just seems like every shot he takes is going in. And that's, you know, that's a big thing for a shooter. You have to have that, you know, attitude that no matter how many times you're going to release it, the ball's going to go in. And, man, he made it. That corner free he made late in the game, I think it was it in regulation at the end of the game, or overtime? It was just unreal. I mean, there was no way he should have shot that, you know, but it was Syracuse's only option at the time, and it was right through the net. You just look at that and you're like, oh, yeah, all right, that's cool. That's fun.
He's cold-blooded.
Yeah.
He's cold-blooded. He's already, like, erased most of our memory of last year's ACC struggles because the guy has been an absolute assassin from outside. It doesn't matter the situation, the pressure, the score. He has just been, you know, completely lights out, and this is what we've needed. And, you know, while Christmas is obviously the most important player on this team, without Cooney, we're still losing a good portion of these games this season.
It's great because like you said, he's even when he went through a little bit of a slump a couple of games ago, where he's like 4-for-13 through a couple of games, we didn't hear it on Twitter. Like, people weren't freaking out about Cooney falling into a slump because it felt like, oh, he'll get out of it, and then sure enough, he's like 12-for-21 or something. It might be a little more than that now, but they showed that late in the game on the stats, but he's just been shooting insane. So there's no longer a worry that after a couple games he's going to disappear and lose everything.
That's spot on. Breaking news. Duke's probably going to lose to Miami tonight by a lot.
the two in a row.
They're down 15. Yeah, they're down 15 right now. Canes are giving them hell.
Miami's a weird team. Like, they started off so hot, and then they lost a couple bad games, and now they're surging back. They've had a couple nice wins. Beating Duke, maybe Duke's not as good as we thought like a week ago, but it's still a really talented team. We're really low support, 15-15 right now, and they're about to lose by double digits. So Miami's something to be reckoned with, even though they did lose to Green Bay and Eastern Kentucky. Providence is not a bad loss, but, pretty strange team.
The other two Larenagas, Barney.
Larenagas is a really good coach. Like, they're nothing to be taken lightly.
I mean, this is also just a case of Duke playing some hot garbage defense for two straight games now. That NC State game was a disaster for them, and I know Jay Billis got on the horn with folks after that game and seemed very surprised on ESPN to see defensive lapses enough to give NC State, what was it, 85 or 87 points. And this game is probably going to end at the same final score or even higher for Miami. This is, I think, a team that, for the most part, like, it has talent but doesn't have the, you know, just like lights-out shooters. I mean, team shooting 50% from three right now. They've gotten to the line 24 times, but overall, they're only shooting about 50% on the game. It's just, this is a Duke team that suddenly, and like I saw a lot of critique of Okafor, now after, you know, raving about him at the beginning, everyone's suddenly saying that the guy has a lot of defensive lapses, and he looks really vulnerable on that end. I'm curious to see what happens to Duke now. As people kind of have enough tape to really start exploiting, some of their faults.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. I really don't. I'm unconvinced that there's a great team in college basketball this year. Kentucky should have lost at least one of those two games last week, and obviously, mark of a good team is being able to win those ton of games. But they got very lucky that they beat those two. They beat both those teams, and those are not even like second tier SEC teams generally. A&M was without their best player. Ole Miss is not a great team. So Kentucky. This isn't a great offensive bunch. They're really good on defense, but a team that shoots well can knock them out, I think. And they're not going to go undefeated. That's absurd. Duke, we've seen they have issues. I honestly think right now, if I had a vote, I'd be putting Virginia at number one. I think they're just the most consistent group, but I don't think they're a great team. I think they're really well coached and have a bunch of experienced players. But college basketball is incredibly wide open this year, even more so than it usually is, I think, despite the fact that people thought, you know, Duke and Kentucky were such a cut above.
I mean, in my opinion, I still think Kentucky and Duke are still the top two teams to beat. I mean, I watched a lot of both their games, and when both those teams are on, they're just remarkable to watch. Teams go through slumps. It's a long season, and they're 17 to 20-year-old kids. They're not going to be in sync all the time. When I've seen Kentucky on, they're the best defensive team I've seen in a long time. When I've seen Duke on, they're the most well-coached, talented team I've seen in a while. And it each comes in ebbs and flows, and we see it with Syracuse teams quite frequently. Last year was an example of that. We were, 25 wins hanging on by our skin of our teeth, and then it just goes down the crapper. It happens. So, to me, I still think Kentucky Duke is 1-2. Virginia, like Ann said, Virginia's been steady, and they're going to be that steady rock as the season continues. They're going to drop maybe a game or two, But Virginia's going to be that steady rock as the season continues going into March. And then, you know, like you said, it's just, I mean, we live in a world, guys, where UConn won two of the last three NCAA tournaments, and you could argue that those two teams that won it were not even close to a top 25 team heading into March. It's just the way it goes. I mean, especially nowadays in college hoops, when if you're clicking at the right time and the other teams are just not as good as you at that time, you can beat them. I mean, like Dan said, there isn't like the separation between the great teams and the good teams like there used to be. If you're a great team now, you know, you're just a little bit of a step ahead of those good teams. But, yeah, in any given day, anybody can beat anybody. So college basketball is going to be a lot of fun this year. There's going to be a lot of upsets. But I still think it's going to come down between how well Duke and Kentucky are playing by the end of the year.
Yeah, they're definitely still guys to beat. I just don't think that they're like this historically great team that people have been trying to build them up as. But maybe they'll end up being that. They're also very young, which is can swing either way for them.
Well, no doubt. I mean, Kentucky, their last two games, their shooting percentage is like historically low. I saw a stat, I can't remember the exact stat, but like their shooting percentage is like in the low 30s as a team in the last two games that they were in overtime. And it's like historically low. And, you know, like Dan said, any other conference possibly, other than maybe Conference USA and those volunteer SEC schools, Kentucky not getting out of those games alive, shooting that bad. Badly, so.
Well, you remember, too, it is, and you know, Calipari addressed this the other day, it was kind of an experimentation, like over Christmas. He said, hey, you know, we're really defensively minded, why don't we focus on some offense? So when you had basically nine individual players focusing on offense, what happens is you might score a lot, but you're also going to have a ton of defensive lapses, and, you know, you're going to have a real lack of attention to detail on defense. And I think what we saw tonight, against Missouri, I know the team was, you know, winning handily the last I checked. You saw the team focus back on team defense and really kind of get back to what has made them such a dominant force. I mean, I don't think this will be a team that we look back on as one of the best ever. I think that they will be great. I think that they could very easily win it all. Not to say they will. We've seen teams just as good, just as talented, crap out in the tournament all the time, especially in recent years. But you know what? Like, if they win it all, I think that I just don't think it's going to come with all the accolades of being the best team ever and being, if anything, it'll be what was supposed to happen. And I guess it's a rarity for a team expected to win it all and expected to run the table to ever be seen for what they are, at least in the immediate term, if they pull it off.
I'm looking here at the small transcripts of Boeheim's presser. Did he reference the Villanova game tonight?
I believe so. He said something about Caleb.
Man, he's a guy who never holds grudges, huh?
And Miami just beat Duke by 16. 90-74 at Cameron Indoor.
Separate by 30-something game winning streak at Cameron, conference winning streak at Cameron?
I think so.
Yeah, that's what the – it should be close to the longest in the nation, right? The home winning streak there.
That's insane. All right. Let's get to halftime quick, and then we can kind of transition. If we don't want to talk about Clemson, to be honest, screw Clemson. I don't really care about them as a basketball team or as a university. So
what's
we
Clemson
might just pass
doing?
Over that. For,
you're setting us up for a loss. You know that.
Oh, we have Clemson next. Okay. I thought they were like beating someone remarkable. But
oh, no. No, they lost by 23 to Virginia tonight.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
I think we could probably skip them.
I remember the last time we did a podcast, I think it was, where we skipped over a team last year, and that was the Boston College. That didn't work out so well.
Oh, yeah, you're right. You are Ray.
I remember
Ooh,
that.
Ooh, boy. that was bad. Maybe we do talk about Clemson. Anyway.
We can just give them their due at least that they,
yeah.
You know,
I'll do a little halftime read of just sponsorship notes. We'll skip over beer this time around. I had plenty for my birthday, so we'll just leave it at that. If you want to see more, go to my Untapped page, go to Dan's. Those links are in the post. But wanted to give a quick shout-out to Audible.com, our sponsor for today's podcast. As you all know, Audible.com is a leading provider of digital audio entertainment. You can check out over, 150,000 audiobooks over on audible.com, and you can get one free with a 30-day trial if you go to audiblepodcast.com/noonsmagician. And I got two recommendations. Decided to just go from the hey, this book is a movie category. We got Unbroken, which Angelina Jolie turned into a movie recently. We also have Wild, which is Reese Witherspoon's latest vehicle for another Oscar win. Those two are on there if people want to read them or listen to other people read them to them. And, we'll get to Clemson so we don't jinx ourselves, followed by some bracketology talk and some college football playoff talk to close us out. Clemson, they lost again today.
Great.
Let's
real quick. 9-6 overall, 1-2 in the conference. Jerron Blossom game has scored double figures in 12 straight. Well, I can't. Has scored double figures 12 straight games and leads the Tigers in scoring at 14.0 points per game and 8.1 rebounds per game. That may have been snapped tonight because the ACC press release came out today. But that's something to look forward to. Let's just go through
it
real quick. Where, what's that?
It was snap tonight. He had 9 points and 10 boards tonight.
Oh, man. What's he doing?
I'd like to say Blossom Game is a great last name.
Agreed.
Yes, that is.
I'm a big fan.
It is fantastic. I will say. Well, I will.
You know what? Imagine if he was a florist.
All right. Let's see.
I would have the strongest
really
Blossom cool. Game ever.
Let's see here. Clemson does not shoot the three very well. They are third last in the ACC at 29%.
At the
time, no one in the ACC shoots the three well.
No.
Every team we play so far, they're like, oh, they're like 303rd in the country. I'm like, is that just the ACC at the bottom?
That sounds bad.
They're middle of the pack in rebounding. They block some shots. They're third in block shots in the conference.
Hmm.
Turnover margin, not very good. -1.87, that is worst in the conference. So they turn the ball over a lot. So we've seen...
Oh boy, they're in trouble against us.
Yeah, that's a big trend that we've seen. We've played... All right, guys, get this. So the turnover teams in the ACC, we've played them all. We're all coming up. We've played Wake Forest, Virginia Tech, Georgia Tech, Clemson, Florida State, and Boston College. They're all 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15 in the conference when it comes to turnovers. So we're getting those guys out of the way. I don't know. Let's see what their scoring is here real quick. They are dead last in scoring at 64.7 points per game in the conference. And scoring defense, they allow 62.3 points per game. So they're not going to score. They're going to play decent defense. They're not going to shoot threes. They're going to turn the ball over. So that's their due right there.
So,
yeah,
sounds like
a
team
Syracuse
should beat handily. We'll win by four.
Okay. You know what? I'm looking at the stat line. Blossom Game has gotten pretty fat on, terrible non-conference teams. I mean, guys only had double-digit rebounds once in ACC play through four games. He has managed to score. For the most part, he's had 13, 15, 18, and 9 in his four ACC games thus far. He can hit from three, but I wouldn't bank on it, shooting about 29%. You look at these rebounding numbers, and for a 6'7 forward, who's only about 215. This is not the type of guy that we have to worry about on the inside with Christmas. Christmas is athletic enough. He's not a bulky center. He's a very athletic, lanky center who obviously has added some great strength this offseason. So I don't really see blocking game as the type of matchup problem that maybe some other centers could have or have, presented themselves to be. Again, like Dan said, though, just because all the numbers say Syracuse by 20 doesn't necessarily mean it.
Right.
Well, Clemson got blown out tonight and got blown out against North Carolina. They also managed to beat Pitt and gave Louisville a hell of a game about a week ago, lost by 6 at Louisville. So that's
they did beat Arkansas earlier this earlier in the season, 9 conference, and Arkansas was ranked at the time. But Arkansas is a decent team.
And they have lost to Rutgers, though, so there's that.
Other than that, that's all I got.
I'm going to say that I'm most worried about Riley McGillen. He's only played in 3 games for a total of 6 minutes and is 1-for-2, and I'm fairly confident he's going to drop 18 points.
He's going to be...
That sounds about right.
Yeah.
So,
well, we have to
find out for him.
They should have
guarded him. He's a walk-on. even if... He might only get in the last, 5 minutes of Syracuse up, 12, and he's going to tie the game.
No, I'm hitching my wagon to Patrick Rooks. I think Patrick Rooks just has all the hallmarks of that guy. He's played in 6 games. He played 6 minutes against Virginia and managed to go 1-of-2 from 3. He had a foul and assist. This has that guy written all over it.
That's I'm waiting for it to fill up, and on the other team is just Mookie Jones with, a villainous mustache, ready to shoot all the 3.
Oh, man. It's going to happen. I'm kind of banking on it. It's going to be like Niagara next year.
32-year-old Mookie Jones suits up and just starts dropping 3 for Colgate.
All right, so moving away from Syracuse, I know Dan and I started doing this last week, a little very, very light bracketology. I decided to go to teamrankings.com, do a little browsing through their projected seeds, and looking at those, I see an opportunity for Syracuse. Right now they have this as an 11 seed. So we'd be playing – we'd have a tough bracket. But moving past that, teams I see in an Elite Eight situation, I'm definitely going to go with Kentucky. I'm definitely going to go with Virginia. I'm going to go with Wisconsin. And I'm going to go with Maryland as an Elite Eight to Final Four team, potentially. Ohio State, I think, is also a contender there. And then I think there's a lot of a jumbled mess from that point on. So I think that's like my 5 contenders right now. Doesn't mean they're the 5 best teams, but they're the 5 teams that could have a decent path to the Final Four.
Maryland's pretty crazy. I mean, I expected them to have a tough year, if only because they lost, a bunch of contributors to transfer. It seemed like that they were kind of a sinking ship. And then Des Wells has emerged as a legit star. Melo Trimble is one of the best freshmen in the country. And they're doing incredibly well in the Big Ten. So good for them. I know we cast aspersions fairly frequently towards Maryland, but that team could have been kind of a disaster this year, and they are very much the opposite.
Yeah, I agree. I think Maryland is also benefiting from the lack of familiarity with their new conference opponents, which I do think helped them. I think it helped us a little bit last year as well.
The Big Ten also seems to have traded its recent basketball success for bowl wins, so which they it worked out.
Basketball conference, football conference. whatever, Big Ten. You do you. I didn't really care what happened in the college football playoff last night. This also provides a nice segue. didn't care. But that said, it was a little entertaining to see Oregon and Brand and everything just kind of, you know, go right to shit and burst into flames come the end. And the fact that Oregon had the final punt of the 2014 season will probably be something I'll remember for a while, so for some odd reason, because it makes no sense.
It was Ohio State just, again, such a ridiculous story. That team looked so bad in that Virginia Tech loss. They didn't look all that inspiring in a lot of other games throughout the year. Indiana gave them a run, and Indiana's pretty bad. And then they have all the quarterback nonsense. And then they just started destroying people. And it's funny because they really did the selection committee a solid by making it very – like every game, all three games in the playoff were definitive. And you really couldn't argue against Ohio State afterwards, because they beat Alabama handily. They beat the team that beat Florida State handily. And Oregon, you know, knocked out Florida State without much of an effort. So it was fun to see the things play out. Like, it didn't end up just going down to the two teams that would have been in it in the BCS. And even though it wasn't very close, I thought it was a pretty fun game overall. And just watching Ezekiel Elliott run, that dude is fantastic. And I already saw
playing man ball last night.
Yeah, I already saw some people like, oh, he's from New York. Like, why couldn't we get him? Like, shut up. He wasn't gonna. Well,
we weren't gonna get him.
That's why we didn't recruit him. That's why we didn't get him. Because he's so good, and Ohio State's an incredible program, and we're not there, and we're probably never gonna be a program that gets those kind of guys consistently. So sorry, Syracuse fans who think that every player in the Northeast should go to Syracuse.
No, I mean, Elliott was terrifyingly good last night. Cardell Jones was terrifyingly good last night. And I think those two players obviously are going to rack up the accolades for it. I would love for my own New York Giants to draft Elliott in 2016 when he's ready to go. But who knows? Maybe not. But I think what really deserves the credit here is, I think, surprisingly, one of the narratives that everyone played up beforehand being the difference maker, and that was the trenches battle, and then how Ohio State just completely had Oregon in terms of size, and that was able to negate Oregon's speed. I think you saw it against Alabama too, and Alabama's a big team up front on both ends, and Ohio State's lines were just able to beat them down. And I think where you normally see, you know, Oregon hang around for three quarters and then just completely put on the gas, because teams are completely wiped out come the fourth, you saw Ohio State be able to pretty much, you know, step on their throats. And that, to me, I guess, is the most surprising thing, was you never thought you'd see Oregon run out of gas the way they did. And it was crazy to watch. It was crazy to see Oregon basically get a slowed-down version of its own medicine with Ohio State. I mean, where Ohio State beats you isn't with a pass. Ohio State beats you by just completely bruising the hell out of you. And they'll play at speed, but they'll play at speed with much bigger athletes than Oregon does. And that's where I think the difference lies, is that you didn't really see the Buckeyes wearing down against, you know, smaller, shiftier guys that Oregon has at the playmaking position versus Ohio State, which really just had battering rams at quarterback and running back in particular.
Yeah, I mean, Elliott has, what, 36 carries, and it never really looked like it affected him. He was running strong well into the fourth quarter. And like you said, I mean, Oregon's not even a team. I know there was that bit of that, you know, people who don't watch them often will say they're not a physical team. Like, they were plenty physical than Florida State, which is a pro-style team that beats teams up. But Ohio State was just on another level, like you said, in Alabama and then in Oregon. So, you know, credit to and Urban Meyer obviously just did a fantastic job. The team was so well prepared. Oregon's offense, aside from like the long touchdown early in the second half, really didn't seem to faze Ohio State. They knew it was coming. They weren't freaked out by it or really affected by it. Even though they said afterwards it was tough to play against that pace, but You wouldn't know it watching the game.
Nope, I would definitely tend to agree. Jared, anything from you on the national championship before we sign off for the night?
Yeah, my thought from last night was really it just goes to prove that there's no right or wrong way to win a football game, right? I mean, for the last year or two or three, you know, Oregon's kind of set the trend in the fast pace, up tempo, you know, spread it out, which I love. I think it's innovative, it's fun, go for it on fourth down. It's fantastic. It's a different way of looking at the game and trying to win it, which is fantastic. We all like that stuff. But in the end, there's no right or wrong way how to win a football game. And it all really comes down to just executing your game plan and beating the crap out of the other guy. Or, I mean, just think about last night. Oregon takes a 7-0 lead right off the bat. They force, I don't know if it was a free and out, but they force Ohio State punt. Oregon gets the ball again. They're looking with all the momentum they have, and they get a drop pass to go free and out. All right, so if they make that, if they catch the ball, they probably continue their momentum. Again, they get an opportunity. I think it was like a tie ball game at because I think Ohio State scored, and then Oregon got a chance to go up another touchdown, but a guy drops a long, big play. I mean, those are two huge drops that they have right in the first quarter there that really could have been, you know, turning points in Oregon's, like, execution. You know, they want to keep the pedal going, and they can't because they're not executing where Ohio State, they're getting the opportunity of just running the ball right down Oregon's throat, and that's exactly what they want to do because Oregon's giving them the opportunities. So it was just it was interesting to see in that standpoint when it comes to the overall big picture thing. I was rooting for the Ducks. My brother's a huge Oregon Ducks fan, so it was kind of disappointing for him to watch them lose again in the national championship. But overall, the playoff itself was a huge success. I can't wait for it next year. I don't know if I'm in favor of them expanding it to 8 games. That's another conversation. I think I like the 4-team format with the New Year's Day and then the national championship. It was a lot of fun the way the playoff worked out.
I'd agree. And I think that's a good place to end it, actually. Thank you for this late night edition of Trojan News and Absolute Podcast, guys. Much appreciate you hopping on right after the thrilling Syracuse win.
Anytime. Glad we could
do it. Now I can sleep.
Yeah, as weird as the timing works out, this actually, I feel like a post game actually is kind of fun. Actually does give us at least a little bit more, immediate term thing to talk about, versus just kind of a lot of reviewing and previewing and all that. But we'll see. Obviously this is always schedule permitting. That was Dan and Jared. I'm John. Thank everybody for tuning in to Trojan News and Absolute Podcast. Sponsored by Audible.com, as we've mentioned time and time again. You can check us out on Blog Talk, on iTunes. You can rate, review, do whatever it is that makes you happy and also gives us a good standing in your heart and the internet. Go Orange tonight, and looking forward to the next game against Clemson.